Is this thing on?
This thing is on.
Word.
To your mother.
That as well.
So,
How are you?
I'm well. I'm not unwell. Actually, I am unwell. Right now, I'm probably speaking bacterium into this little foam thing on the microphone.
Me too.
Are you sick too?
Yeah. Oh yeah, motherfucker. I got the flu like I'm bad.
Everybody has it.
Chemtrails, man. That's what it is.
Yeah?
I don't know. Maybe. Why not?
You know, it's just like one of those popular things, you know, like...
Can you prove that that's not true?
Well, absence of proof isn't proof of...
Therefore, it's true.
You know what? You're right.
Yeah. That's how it works. That's how it works in the Bush administration. You know, that's the burden of proof, as far
yes.
as they're concerned, is, well, there could be weapons of mass destruction there. Therefore, there are. Therefore... They're trying to kill us.
No, but the best one was recently he pretty much said that there weren't weapons of mass destruction. However, there were before there weren't, and that there were plans to get later in the future. So
right.
he had to stop him from getting weapons that he didn't have but would have.
And then he would have killed us.
And then he would have killed us, which I was just commenting before. Is like, wow, that's... You can go to war with anybody over that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think France eventually will try to kill us. And so we should blow them up now. And, well, they've been trying to kill us for years with brie and wine and all these other obnoxious foods. Eclairs.
Perfume.
Certainly giving us high cholesterol and, you know, leading to obesity. So I think that we should preemptively bomb France. I think that that's reasonable.
I think now would be a good time to remind our audience that you do satire, because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there listening right now are thinking...
Oh, yeah. Hey, who let the arch-conservative into
the building?
I hate
the French.
no, actually, I love the French, and je parle un peu de français, and I think the French on many political issues are clearly way ahead of us, but who isn't, you know?
Yeah, and nobody's perfect either.
Nobody's perfect. No, yeah. And they've had some really nasty race riots there, and they've had all kinds of stuff.
They
going
love
on.
Their race riots.
Yeah, well, they really get it on when they have a race riot
yeah.
in France. You know, they don't hold back, and you know, I don't know. I suppose there's something to admire about the frankness of it. Get it?
Yeah, it's like a pun.
The lowest form of comedy available. You know, I found it interesting in Bush's speech yesterday. He said that he accepts responsibility. Well, what does that mean? You know,
he said the exact same thing after Louisiana, after he lost New Orleans. He said that, you know, whatever mistakes were made, I accept responsibility. And the thing that means to me is like, that has nothing to do with accepting blame.
Oh, no.
Of course he accepts responsibility. He's the president. That, by definition,
right.
means he's responsible for all the things that the federal government does that's fucked
right.
up.
I think what he means when he says, I accept responsibility, is he's saying, I accept that we're done talking about this.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of it. It's just like, I accept that I have nothing else to say about it, you know, and that we aren't going to talk about it anymore. That's kind of...
Well, and it's such a moot point. It's like you can get drunk and accept responsibility of a car
right.
and still kill somebody with it.
Right, yeah. And you can go, I'm sorry, and they're still dead, yeah. you know?
Yeah.
I mean, him accepting responsibility like that is meaningless. I mean, unless there's accountability, then it's nothing. It's worse than nothing. It's just a sham. It's another sham in a long series of shams that consists of the Bush administration. So
yep.
So what's new, man?
Hey, man. You know, I'm just doing the news. This is actually my last Thursday news. I'm gonna move to Tuesdays, but
well, you'll be right before us.
Oh yeah, great.
Sweet.
Great. Yeah, awesome. And I love your show, and I wanted to, you know, have you just talk about it and just tell me like how'd you guys put it together and
well,
what it's all about.
Let's see. National Corporate Radio started early on in our time at Kill Radio. We had started at Kill Radio in the summer of 2001. And at the time, we had really up to that point just done sketch comedy. And so we weren't really sure what to do with the slot that we had yet. So we come in and we do our comedy, you know. And largely that consisted of bringing in comedy sketches and reading them on the for the web.
So these, you know, were things you prepared before you came in?
Right, yeah. And I mean, you know, we just have our wacky banter or whatever, too, and hope that that was funny somehow. And, you know, we do maybe some fake interviews or something like that. But for the most part, we were coming in doing, like, old comedy sketches. And what we consistently have this problem of doing a comedy sketch and going, you know, this was written for the stage. There's all these visual gags in here that really, you know, amplify it and make it so much funnier. Or sometimes it's really critical to the sketch, the something visual. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, and so I guess we'll just read the stage direction to the audience now because they can't see anything. You know, just listening. And it occurred to us that, well, to me, us, I guess, that we needed something that was more appropriate to the format. And so it was really first born out of that, out of just wanting something that was better suited to a strictly listening audience. And I was an NPR junkie. I still am. I listen to KPFK more than NPR, and I like Pacifica and KPFK a lot more than NPR. I have a lot of bones to pick with NPR, as anyone who listens to our parodies of it would know. And yet it's sort of a love-hate relationship, I guess. I don't dismiss them outright. They do some really good programming.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they do some valid stuff.
My favorite NPR moments are National Public Radio is brought to you by Merck, the biggest fucking pharmaceutical company
right.
in the world.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, every evil corporation sponsors them, you know.
Yeah, but the generally speaking, I mean, the quality of their programming is better than most, I think.
It's better than most. I mean, it's better than...
And their music programming is quite good, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's, you know, I mean, and that's the thing, too, is like, you know, there are times when Nick Harcourt makes me want to just punch the radio, but because I'll just be like, what asshole British loser are you putting on now? It's just like, is this some guy you went to college with? Why the fuck are you making me listen into this garbage? But then other times, the place I'll be like, wow, that is so cool, and I'll go buy it, you know? And I have to admit, I mean, I have to admit it more than I care to, that I've gotten a lot of great music from listening to KCRW.
Yeah.
You know, I've listened to it, I've been like, what's that? I got to write that down. You know, that's awesome. And then I'll go pick it up. So,
yeah,
so I guess
too.
It works. Initially, we were going after NPR just because it suited our purposes more than anything.
And what was it really that the sort of got your goat? Was it the idea that they present themselves as a liberal alternative, but don't really really live up to it?
Yes, to some extent. It was really we did our first national corporate radio script in right around this time, 2001. And this was at a time, this was just after September 11th, when supposedly irony was dead, and nobody was comfortable really making jokes anymore. Even though such horrendous things were going on, not just September 11th, which obviously was you know, terrifying and everybody freaked out, but the government's response to it. I mean, right away, I was like, oh, my God, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
You know, we're going to start a Department of Homeland Defense. I'm like, okay. Oh, did you just have that sitting in the back room and you just dusted that off? You were just waiting for the... Oh, yeah, here we go. Homeland Defense, finally, put it up. Yeah.
I was wondering why Jesus kept telling me to write this book. I never thought I would need it.
Yeah.
But suddenly this happens.
It was just like, oh, man, is every freak out conspiracy theory coming true right now? You know, mm-hmm. Are they going to dust off all those crazy executive orders that I always heard about mm-hmm. with the trains and like and the back of the freeway signs marked with directions to take everybody to the camps? And, you know, right away, we started making jokes about it before anybody else felt comfortable with it. In fact, we did a show before then where we were like goose-stepping around and singing, Homeland Defense, Homeland Defense, Homeland Defense, Defense, Defense. And, you know, I don't think people were ready to laugh at it in November, but we did it anyway. And then, you know, listening to NPR at this time, they really took just, you know, like a lockstep approach to the administration at that point. Whereas up to then, they had been willing to voice some criticisms, and, you know, they're centrists.
Yeah.
By nature. And I don't even object to that. I think, well, that's fine. You're publicly sponsored. Just do good reporting. That's all I care about. You know?
Right.
I don't care what political tilt you want to have. You know, just go down the middle, but just do good reporting. Just you know, that's fine. But it was just like, bam, after September 11th, they're just like, sir, yes, sir, where, you know, we'll stand with the president, and, you know, yeah. And no questioning. And
it's like they're afraid of being audited or something. You
know, yeah,
tested,
well.
Tested for their patriotism.
Right,
as I think
right.
A lot of people are.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and I don't know.
Except for Fox, of course. They they cool.
Yeah. No worries if you're over at Fox. Yeah, just don't get on a program with Bill O'Reilly and try to skew the deaths on September 11th in any way other than his line.
Yeah.
But
you know, my favorite is Neil Cavuto. If I'm not a violent person, but if I ever get to punch somebody, like if I win like a lottery thing where it's like you get to punch one person, I would just love to punch that guy. Something about his face that just like,
oh yeah, he's a prick. He's a prick.
He was on yesterday. I try not to watch Fox News because it's.
You do have to watch it every now and then just to know what's going on. You're right. It infects your mind.
Right. So I watch it, and then I get so disgusted I have to change channel. So I happen to flip by it, and Neil Cavuto was trying to get this conservative guest of his to say that it's a problem that people say Happy Holidays now in malls instead of Merry Christmas.
Right.
And he wasn't able to get the conservative guest of his to say that that was the problem. What the conservative guest was saying was that there's a more general cultural problem, which we've lost the religious meaning of Christmas, and it's become commercialized and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But Neil Cavuto is getting so frustrated because he wanted him to say that the problem was we used to be able to say Merry Christmas, and now we can't. You know,
right? It's he wanted that soundbite.
Yeah, it's the liberals' evil influence on us, making us godless.
Well, going back to the whole, you know, raison d'etre of national corporate radio. I mean, part of it certainly was just that we needed a good medium to do comedy on for a radio kind of format. But part of it was a growing frustration with NPR. And it wasn't just September 11th and their sudden lockstep with whatever the administration wanted. Prior to that, I don't know if you remember this story, but I think it was around 2099 or maybe 2000. It was revealed that both at the newsrooms of CNN and National Public Radio that there were Army PSYOPs interns in the newsroom. And this isn't this was like mainstream. NPR admitted it on NPR.
Wow. Yeah, no, that went below my radar.
Yeah. There were armies, and of course they said, oh, well, we didn't know, and we got rid of them. Yeah, that's very comforting. Thank you. You know, thanks for letting me know, and now I guess I know I can't really trust your reporting on defense issues, because you've got people in there, oh, I don't know, are they editing it? Are they telling you can and can't publish this? Are they just making suggestions? Or are they acting like intern? Are they just using the copier? What's going on?
You have to like call them once a week and say, are there any PSYOPs there now? Or so that new stuff before, that stuff is okay, right?
Yeah, did you background check the interns this semester? So what good would that do? You know, they're PSYOPs, you know?
Yeah.
It's just going to, you know, yeah, I'm from UNLV, I like to party, woo! Let me write that down. So I found that disconcerting, I guess you could say. But really, it's been that the trend, the increasing corporatization of all of public media. PBS is even worse. I mean, PBS, you got full-on Toyota ads on there now, you know?
Yep.
It's an unadulterated ad, you know? It's like, what the fuck? What is that, you know?
But it seems like you can't... You can't really find a happy medium anymore because it's like.
Burger Boy!
What's
hey
up?
Hey, everybody!
Burger Boy!
Got DJ Chicken Leather.
DJ Chicken Leather and Starsky Suave in the house, y'all. Oh, and my Darth Vader mask is back.
Yes, but there's something inside.
Wait, there's more.
There's something inside.
What the hell is this?
You don't even know how good it is.
Oh my god.
I'm going to describe this for my radio listeners. Whoa! It's. Turkish Star Wars? What is this?
Wow.
In this secret version obtained pre-Saddam regime, Indiana Jones is Luke's father.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow, dude. Wow. Well, it's going to be a very Merry Christmas for me.
Fan-tranny-tastic.
And I just want to say, by saying that... Oh.
We got an emergency here.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Oh, my God! Ah,
they found me. I don't know how they found me.
Look, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. I said Christmas.
The Libyans! Get him.
He said holidays. I said Christmas.
You built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Oh, we saved him. He's okay.
1.21 gigawatts!
The Libyans!
Thank you, DJ Chicken Leather. Okay, TMI. Too much information.
A sure thing to fix you up is there's this weekend over at the Machine Project, the gallery there next to the Echo Park Film Center, where they're showing It's a Wonderful Life tonight. But on this weekend on Saturday, they're having a fry barbecue. Anything you want to fry, you bring over and you can fry it.
Anything
up to 20 pounds.
Okay.
So there's a 20-pound limit.
2x4s.
Two so by like, fours if you want to fry them.
You can't fry the Patriot Act because that would be too heavy, right?
Yeah, I think it would. I'm going to fry Bush's face, man.
Whoa.
Hey,
in effigy.
Hey.
In effigy.
Actually, I've been meaning to ask you. Derek, why do you hate America?
Well.
And why do you support terrorism?
Well, you know.
Because I know why I do.
Right.
So I don't even need to discuss it.
I guess, it's not so much that I hate America. It's just, you know, I've got a few qualms here and there.
I knew that would get a phone call.
That whole, you know,
typhoid thing going on.
Sure.
You know, the blankets we gave to Indians. That wasn't nice.
No, it wasn't nice.
The whole slavery thing.
But if
thing,
there was ever a society
so cool.
that was asking for smallpox, it was the Native Americans. Am I
well,
right?
I mean, they wouldn't dress that way if they didn't want smallpox.
Exactly.
But I mean, and you make a good point there. That ought to get a couple calls. And you know why am I an Osama lover? Well, I don't have any choice because the president said you're either with us, or you're with the terrorists.
That's what I'm getting at with the why you hate America. It's like it's the whole black and white thing.
Right.
It's like,
and it's because, and I said, well, shit. You know, I don't like Osama, but I really don't like Bush. So maybe I can change Osama's mind. I can't change Bush's mind.
Well, and because the whole doctrine of this war is idiotic and sort of juvenile, it's like it can only be talked about in a good versus evil sort of way. But
well,
it's not true.
Right.
It's really sort of evil in this direction versus evil in that direction. I mean,
yeah.
People in power, generally speaking, aren't good people. I mean, that's sort of a universal truism, I think.
Generally, but not always.
Not always.
Yeah.
But
remember Jimmy
speaking,
Carter.
Yeah, but what I'm saying here, but even in times, even Jimmy Carter.
Okay, even Jimmy
person,
Carter,
even,
bad
even
things happened to Jimmy
Carter. Even the
U.S.
government at the time, yeah.
I agree. Bad things happened to Jimmy Carter.
You know, it's like we're put in this position where it's like, well, you know, I'm not defending Saddam Hussein by saying we shouldn't go to war.
Well,
but
right, but that's the whole rubric of war. You can't have a war unless you have an enemy that's demonized, is made into evil incarnate. It won't work. Because if you look at the nuances of the situation, then you won't have a war. And that's what they wanted, was a war.
Yeah.
Of course, to me, and I've been in the minority position on this, and I don't care, but I don't think that the rubric of war, that the whole lexicon of war, was an appropriate response to 9/11. Because 9/11 was a heinous crime, but it was a crime.
Yeah.
And what's so sad is that if we had dealt with it as a criminal conspiracy and had taken the goodwill that we almost automatically got as a result of 9/11, and there was plenty of it.
And
there
we got it from people who hate us.
Oh, fucking A. I mean, you know, Saddam Hussein expressed, people forget, Saddam Hussein said he was sorry
I saw it in Arafat. It was like, man, that's fucked up.
Arafat gave blood. Arafat gave blood for the victims of 9/11.
Wow.
There was a picture of him with an IV. He was given blood because people said, wow, you know, even if I think America has done all these terrible things to us, that isn't right. Two wrongs don't make a right, and people saw that. And they said, you know what? That's just not the way to deal with this. That's not right. It's just not right. And if we had dealt with it as criminal activity that we needed to address on an international scale, we wouldn't have the problem of terrorism now.
What is it that makes it a criminal act versus an act of war? And I agree with you, by the way, but just to clarify for our listeners.
The difference for me between a criminal act and an act of war, as in large, it has to do with whether you're dealing with a political entity or a group of criminals. I mean, you know, when Osama bin Laden declared war on the United States in 1996 or 98, I don't know, somewhere around there, nobody took him seriously because that's like me going, you know, to France and going, I declare war on you, France. It's like they'd just arrest me and say, you're crazy. I mean, they'd get me a psychiatric help. They wouldn't, like, send the tanks after me.
Well,
it's ridiculous.
It seems like the administration refers to Al-Qaeda or whatever you want to call them as a political entity when it serves their interests. When it serves their interests for going to war, for example, then they become a political entity.
Right.
When it doesn't serve their interests, like in terms of, you know, Geneva Convention and torture and things like that, well, then they're, well, they don't wear uniforms.
Right.
So I guess we could torture them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so they really do want to have it both ways. And, you know, it always is like, it should raise a red flag whenever your president is looking to go to war. Like, I remember in the buildup to the war in Iraq, it was just like anything that Saddam Hussein did in one direction or another seemed to be like, he did that so we can go to war.
Yeah.
Or he didn't do that, so I guess we got to go to war. As opposed to like looking for all these like ways to avoid war, like, gee, I wish we didn't have to do this, but it looks like this is happening and that's happening. It's this push, you know, trying to convince America we needed to go to war. I'm only 28. I've never seen anything like that in my lifetime. Maybe my parents had, you know, but I hadn't lived through a war at all.
I actually, it reminded me a little bit of the first Gulf War. It was definitely worse than the first Gulf War. I mean, at least in the first Gulf War, we did have allies with us that marched in when we went in. We had a UN Security Council mandate that did call for action. I mean, everybody forgets, you know, that there was supposed to be this second UN mandate that would actually, you know, legitimize combat going in and invading Iraq. We never went and got that. Because we knew that we were going to lose that vote in the Security Council. We would have lost it by 11-4. And so we didn't even try. And Bush ultimately just said, well, we're going, you know. I remember I had a correspondence right in the build-up to the war in Iraq. Like, this was like January 2003. And an old friend of mine, who's since, you know, become a conservative. I think he's gotten a little more reasonable lately. But at the time, he said, you know, he's not going to invade Iraq. He's just bluffing. He's just bluffing. He's trying to scare Saddam into giving up the weapons of mass destruction. You'll see. He won't do it. And I wrote back and I was like, dude, they moved the army over there. They're not fucking around. They're going. It doesn't matter what Saddam does now. They're going.
Yeah,
I could tell you that right now. Short of people, you know, laying down in the street in front of the tanks, and that probably won't even stop them. They're gonna go, and you're crazy if you think that this is just a bluff. They don't move 200,000 troops to the Persian Gulf just for an exercise. They're going, and unfortunately, I was right.
And why? What do you think is the point of all of this? It can't be as simple. I mean, obviously, it's not one thing. It's not one reason. And obviously, they had this whole plan.
Oh, no, it's the
long
oil.
Before 9/11. But
no,
I mean,
it is. It's the oil.
But you think it's just the oil?
Well, I mean, you can say, oh, it's because they want to control the region, and you know, they want to have it. It's not just oil; it's power, but. That's oil. I mean, it comes back to oil.
Yeah.
I mean, the way I look at it is, we'll be there. You know, when Bush says, we'll be there until complete victory, you know, whatever the, you know, and people go, well, what is complete victory? Well, I think I know what it is. Complete victory is the day that the spigot runs dry in Iraq. That's complete victory. And then we leave. That's when we can go home.
Until then, we're not going home. Wasn't accomplished in May of 2003 when he put on the little outfit.
It was a show for the kids, you know. I mean, that was some nothing.
Show.
Yeah, it was a fun show, you know. Yeah. Flying in on a helicopter outside of San Diego, you know, whatever. Stupid bastard. It's just bullshit. I mean, it's over when the oil runs out, and that's pretty much it. I mean, lately they've been making all this talk about they want to prevent the caliphate from coming back. You know, they want to stop they because you know the terrorists talk about how they want to have. You know what the caliphate is? That's like where there would be an Arab or a Muslim king, and it would all be sort of this Muslim holy land extending from Spain to Indonesia is how they describe it. And I don't doubt that there is a minority of people who want that to happen, but I don't think that that's a credible threat. I think that's an excuse.
So all of the people that we're fighting in Iraq right now that we call insurgents... What is this thing that it seems to me like in the media they're always presenting it like every single person that's fighting us in Iraq is from another country or another planet or something like that. Like there's no Iraqi who's like, hey, don't invade me. What is that about? I mean...
You have to delegitimize whatever concerns they have in order to keep people wanting to fight them. If you acknowledge that their issues are reasonable, then it makes it a lot harder to want to beat them up, because then maybe they would earn your sympathy instead of just being thought of as some sort of animal, which is how they certainly want to keep the troops thinking. It makes it a lot easier for them to pull the trigger.
Do you think we'll ever leave?
When the oil runs out, yeah. Yeah, that's when I think we'll leave, because it will no longer serve a purpose for us.
What about this election? What is what's the deal with this election? Do you think it's legitimate in any way? I think honestly, what's so great about a democratic nation surrounded by countries that want to destroy it?
You know, I'm highly cynical, and yet I have to say, I think that it's not entirely illegitimate. I mean, it's definitely tainted, and it's not entirely legitimate because it's an election that happened under an occupation, so it's not truly a free and fair election. But when you listened to some of the people who came out of the election booth today, you know, much as I would not, I suppose I'm most hesitant to say anything positive about it because I feel like it's handing Bush a victory, and that I don't want to do. And he doesn't deserve. But nonetheless, I support the principle of democracy. And when these people can select their own leaders instead of living under a tyrant like Saddam Hussein, well, that's a good thing. But that doesn't, the ends don't justify the means.
That's how they get you, you know, because it's like you can't argue that Iraq is better off, you know, with Saddam Hussein. Clearly, without Saddam Hussein, you know, with a brown piece of paper, Iraq is better off.
Right, but that's what he'll say now. He says, well, the world's a better place without Saddam Hussein. And it's like, yeah, but that's not why you told us to go in. It's like a bait-and-switch car dealer, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, well, okay, well, you know, I said you were going to get a you know, brand-new SUV. Instead, you got this crappy Citroen you can't get parts for, but hey, you know,
it's
now you got it.
You had.
So, well, I'll service it for $200. You know, it's just like, well, that's not okay. You know, it's like, I mean, even if this were the greatest exercise of democracy on the planet, I still think Bush should be impeached.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't justify that, because that's not.
Well, and the world would be a better place without Bush, too.
Oh, yeah, it would.
But, you know, it's hard to justify.
Yeah.
Destroying him.
Well, you can't just destroy Bush, because then you get Cheney.
Well, yeah. Well, and worse than that, and I mean this seriously, if Bush goes down in any sort of violent way, it's the worst thing that can happen for us, because he gets martyred.
You know? And that's the most despicable
Kennedy
martyr
was not
I can imagine.
A great president. I'm not saying he was a particularly bad one, and I'm certainly not putting him anywhere around Bush, but dying was you know
was
changed
good,
what Kennedy
it was
to this country.
Him.
Yeah, it was an excellent career move. I mean, he couldn't have done better if he were a painter, you know.
Yeah, well, you know.
So, and imagine if, like, in the middle of this war, this whole debate about should we have gone in, shouldn't we have gone in, all this stuff, and then somebody kills the president, and he goes down as this great conservative leader that was going to bring religion back to America and
oh, Lord.
And all that stuff.
Lord, help us all. Well, hey, I'm going to hand it over to Mr. Starsky Suave here for a little bit, and I'm going to see if I can find a cup and maybe snag some of your water.
Sure. I should tell you, though, actually, I'm getting over a cold, though.
And now I have the germs of Derek on this microphone for my consumption.
Starsky, how are you?
I'm all right, but I want to let you know something right off the bat here. If you didn't know it already, I'll tell you right now. The Pentagon is monitoring you. The Pentagon is monitoring anti-war protesters. The Pentagon is monitoring everybody in America because they are threats, and you are a threat, and Derek is a threat. You got that?
I got it. All right. I got it.
Kill Radio is a threat.
Kill Radio is a major threat.
Yeah. If people who are peacefully protesting outside of a recruiting office are considered a threat, you can bet that we're a threat.
I like to think of myself as an evildoer.
An evildoer? Yeah. Not an evil thinker, just an evildoer?
Well, by sheer existence, I'm doing evil.
Wow. So just every breath you draw and then exhale is evil.
You're
exuding evil.
It's a breath of terrorism. So tell me about the people that that do that. And what your participation is in it. You do some of the, I think, the writing and the performing. And
yeah, what you said. Let me go back a ways back to 1994, Tucson, Arizona. I met several of the people when they was performing in, what is it, some kind of a theater in the park, Shakespeare in the Park thing, all right?
Uh-huh.
I was just a prop maker, a humble prop maker.
A humble prop maker.
I made the props, and they acted the parts. And we had a good time. It was very fun. That was the same year that the people who do that was born. I was not a part of the people who do that. I was fans of many of the people. Fast forward a few years, they eventually, little by little, moved to the Los Angeles area. And then at the very end, I moved to Los Angeles area. And I renew my fanship. I get to see their shows. I'm a groupie, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kill Radio aspect, I've been listening to their Kill Radio shtick. Every once in a while, I'd be a caller. Whatever I could do to be a part of it. So, eventually, as I kissed their asses long enough, they said, you know what, kid? Why don't you come along over here? We got this Corntato thing going on.
Uh-huh.
So Corntato was born. Corntato goes back a few years before that, before it actually, you know, we did our show. Miles wrote a sketch about Corntato, a little, I don't know, a couple minute thing, and it was decided that Corntato, the time was now to make Corntato a full-fledged 1 hour, a little bit more, play. So all of us got together and started meeting about it. We got the kernel of the idea from Miles, and we all started expanding this, you know, getting some more characters, the interaction, what's the plot here, where is it going? And it was an exciting process, and it was really fun to get to come in on that right at the beginning. Well, not right at the beginning, but near the beginning of the active part of the writing. I mean, there was some passive writing, the, you know, unconscious stream of consciousness kind of writing going on, and there was some meetings, but then the official meetings began, and I got to be a part of it. I have to thank John Seymour, who was upfront about the fact that he said, I can't put in the full time on this one. If I can be a part of it in a small way, I will, and he was actually a part of it in a big way. But the fact that he said he couldn't really be in on the full-time acting is why I got a chance to get in there. So I'm very grateful to him. We all chipped in on the ideas and just kind of brainstormed it and worked it and edited it and back and forthed it. And then we got this this living beast of a Corntato.
Do you think, are you in it more for the comedy entertainment part of it or for the political awareness?
I meant for the power, the raw
for the power.
Yeah, I mean
for the women,
the power and the women and the leather. Yeah, that's why I'm in on it. Well, I guess it would probably be equal parts,
yeah.
Both of the political satire and just the comedy. Okay, maybe three parts. No, three halves. I say I'm in it for three halves. Yeah, comedy in general, political satire in specific, and creative activities. Because I live in a world of brain-numbing boredom. That's my regular day job. And these people who do that saved my creative life. Do you understand and grasp the significance of what I'm saying to you?
Yes.
Okay. Can you can you grok this, yo? So anyway, it was a wonderful experience, and we went to San Francisco and performed it 6 times, and we came back here and did it, and you know, it's still morphing, it's still growing.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So I know you just finished a run of Cortado, and you guys are going to bring it back at some point?
We have 2 plans. One is going to be a radio theater version, a little rewriting, a little sound effectsification. But there could be some more live 3-dimensional performances as well. But this is not etched in any kind of stone or wet concrete yet. But yeah, the Cortado is not dead. Cortado lives.
And do you think Dick Cheney will come to see it?
Dick Cheney may even be in it by the time we come around again. I don't know. Yeah, Dick Cheney needs to know.
Do you think he's evil or he's a robot or both?
I'm getting coached by my handlers to say that he's both. But if you want my unvarnished opinion, you know, I'm not going to mess around with people telling me what to think. I think he's both. That's my opinion.
And your varnished opinion?
My varnished opinion is that he's evil. Yeah. And I'm talking about that bar top varnish, the stuff that does not get, you know, rings from your cold drinks.
That's I've never seen so little of a person, you know, in a major.
Well, you know.
You know something.
Yeah, you guys recently did a special.
It's funny you should mention.
About Dickie.
Richard Dick Cheney. I
wonder if there's more than one possibility here for microphonage. I don't know. It's just a theory. It's a theory. If it's working, one of them may not be working.
Oh,
he's in.
Yeah, I'm in now.
That's the one that's like really hardcore.
Yeah, it is
okay,
pretty loud.
Well, I'll try to.
You dominate now.
No.
Like, I have it like almost all the way down.
Really? Wow. Yeah. This thing's like really.
We must try to overwhelm Derek's voice.
This mic is sensitive.
Well, he needs that because he's a little under the weather, so he needs a boost.
I got sweet gravel coming from this flu, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, I got the, oh yeah, rock listeners, are you ready for some Black Sabbath?
Nice.
I am
ready for some. What we did recently, in answer to your question about Dick Cheney, is that we did do a special Dick Cheney and Exercise in Frustration NCR exclusive. It was originally put together for Critical Mass, but then it grew from there to become another thing.
Critical Mass, what's that?
Well, Critical Mass is a once-a-month combining of several internet radio stations and some even radio stations, right?
I believe so, yeah. And international stations.
International?
Yeah. It's, the last for Saturday? Last Saturday of the month?
We believe that. We have reason to believe that it's the last Saturday.
We reasonably believe that happens. And Kill Radio participates in that. And it's basically a bunch of different internet stations put out the same signal. And then each station contributes a block of time.
They get a couple hour segment, yeah.
And in the last Critical Mass, we contributed a little bit of programming to the 2 hour time slot of Kill Radio. And there are themes, right. And last month's theme was frustration. So we decided to do an entire show about Dick Cheney.
Frust Cheney and how
his whole life was an exercise in frustration.
I mean, this is a natural subject for that whole theme was this man. This man who is seemingly, I mean, on the face of it, you think, well, why is he frustrated? He's in power. But he doesn't ever quite have enough power.
Mm.
He really wants it all. 98% isn't enough for him.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he cannot tolerate dissent. And everything seems to make him groan and grumble, and he's just an angry man.
Well, you know, the thing that amazes me about this whole administration is, and I know this is really sort of asinine, but the way they look, all of them, they look like henchmen. They don't look like politicians at all. They
constipated like henchmen.
Yeah, like they were, like, you know, like God's writing this screenplay about how, you know, these evil henchmen take over the government.
Yeah.
And they're just such stereotypes. I mean, is it really a challenge? Do you get bored trying to satirize Bush and
no,
Cheney.
No, no. The thing is that they produce such wonderful material for us. I mean, it's really been a rich time for comedy because...
Rumsfeld...
Well, yeah, Cheney. Rumsfeld is fantastic.
The only
I mean,
guy in the world that can hold a press conference and say, "Hey, why all the questions?"
Well, he doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't. He doesn't.
Slow down.
He doesn't answer their questions. He asks his own.
Oh my goodness gracious! You know? Yes.
Yeah. Look, is it hard work? Sure. Is it as easy as I thought it was going to be? No. Will we succeed? Of course.
I didn't ask you that, sir. That wasn't my question.
Did you ask me that? I don't know. Am I here? Maybe. You know, I mean that
there are things we know, there are things that we don't know.
There are unknowns
that we know of and the unknowns that we don't know about.
You know? So well, Ari Fleischer, Scott McClellan, which how would they do?
Ari
which
Fleischer
one would you rather beat up?
Ari Fleischer was more fun to beat up, actually, yeah. I think. Ari Fleischer was craftier. He was smoother than Scott McClellan.
He was.
Scott McClellan is just a pud.
He's easily intimidated, Scott McClellan.
Yeah. But he's also boring in his intimidated sense. I mean, he just kind of just gets in this little...
He just throws out the same old wall.
I responded to that already, Helen. This is an
ongoing investigation. That's his favorite.
Right.
This is an ongoing investigation, Helen. I've already responded to that question, I think, thoroughly already. That the president
are you
stated
a fucking
views on
tool?
This.
This is
I think I've already responded to that question.
When that investigation has concluded, then we would be happy to respond to that.
Did you already answer this question?
I've already responded to that question earlier, and I think I've already given my statement, and President Bush has already made it clear.
Well,
monotone, you know?
Oh, he's a snoozer,
he needs to go spend some time with his family.
Ari Fleischer... Ari Fleischer was much craftier. He was much more seasoned at the job. You do have to say it's a thankless job, but then again, you know, they're getting well compensated for it.
Is it like the purpose of the job is to keep questions from actually reaching the president and coming back?
Yeah, you're the president's deflector shield. That's all you are as a press. You're a flak, you know.
Yeah, but
you're a flak jacket. You just come in and take the bullets and walk away.
Another way around that is, as Bush has done, is just don't hardly hold any press conferences, and then when you do,
just answer like three questions that have already been submitted.
Or if you do appear in public, you have people sign loyalty oaths before they're in the audience.
Yeah, that's sweet.
How about that?
Holy excuse me, sir, ma'am, we found a sticker on your car that said "No Blood for Oil." You're gonna have to leave this Social Security discussion round table, what do you call it?
Town hall meeting.
There
were people who were removed with shirts that said just like "Save Social Security."
You're not supposed to have an opinion on this unless, of course, you unabashedly embrace Bush's opinion. So please leave.
Blood for oil. What do you think? You never see that.
Not
gonna fly. You never see that. I miss John Ashcroft though.
Holy cow!
He really was Frogman. He was a lot of fun.
Let the eagle soar.
Oh yeah, we had a good time
like
with him.
She's never soared before.
Yeah,
from Rocky Coast.
And he had a very sort
the
of
golden
like
shore. Let the mighty eagle soar. Soar with healing in her sore wings.
Damn, you know even more of it than I do.
He had a really a great creepiness about him.
He was special. He was really special.
He had this sort of molesting uncle kind of way about him. That was really
lost my election to a dead man, but I was appointed by a mental midget. Let the mighty eagles soar.
And the part when he speaks is so bad.
Did you guys see the thing in China where Bush, left the press conference and
the doors?
The doors.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
Whoops.
I saw that. That's a nice little clip.
That was amazing because it was It wasn't the mistake that he made because people make mistakes like that. You know, you're rushing off stage and
his
doors locked.
Sure.
It was his immediate reaction. It was so telling about everything that he is because he pulled on the door once and it was locked. He pulled on it again and confirmed that it was locked. And then suddenly, his body froze. He did an about-face to the audience and stood still like a soldier, completely like deer in the headlights.
Tharn in Watership Down.
Just like, yeah, and then it occurred to him, okay, I got to do something. He goes, I was trying to escape. Well, obviously, it didn't work. And then he just kind of like sauntered over to the podium, and then somebody kind of like alerted him of where the actual exit was. But it was that second where he was just completely dead frozen, where it was like, like he thought he was unpunked, you know, like he was looking for Ashton Kutcher, you know, to like jump out and like, oh, yeah, gotcha, you know. And that's really scary, you know. I mean, that's the president of the United States. And every once in a while, he actually does have to make an actual decision of his own.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that like a lot of decisions get made and then like, okay, president, now you go tell everyone what we decided for you.
Yes, right, right. Here you go.
But every once in a while, it does come down to him, doesn't it?
Yeah. I don't doubt that he makes a lot of the decisions on his own. I think that the poor choices that are made by this administration reflect his lack of understanding of the world.
Do you think he has the capacity to really form policy?
No, I don't. But I think that there are critical things that the president, just because he's the president, has to decide, like going to war in Iraq. I do believe he did make the decision ultimately to do that.
Right.
And I think that he made it for entirely all the wrong reasons. I think that he made it probably primarily for religious reasons. Mm. I think that he decided to go to war in Iraq because he thought that we needed to have soldiers there in preparation for Armageddon. I really think that's more than likely his thought process, which is really terrifying.
The rapture, right? Isn't there like a large number of the administration believe in the rapture? Just you find these hardcore conservative Christians with a lot of, well, before 2001 anyway, having a lot of support for Israel because they believed in 2000 that the rapture was going to come and kill all the Jews.
Oh, yeah.
And in order for that to happen, Israel had to be a state.
Right. You know? Well, have you ever heard about this is going off on a tangent, but have you ever heard about like the whole red heifer thing?
No.
Oh, well, apparently there's some passage in Revelation, some bullshit, about a red cow. There's supposed to be some red cow that's involved in a sacrifice to God in order for the revelations to come or something. And so there are these people that are like breeding cows like crazy, trying to get this perfectly red cow.
Wow.
And they want to get this red cow over to Jerusalem.
But that's going against God's will. They're trying to make it.
Oh, no,
the Lord will provide the red cow. You should not try to breed one. Well, who's trying to play God here?
Genetic, but the Lord provided your mind. And you can use your mind to help your Lord with genetic engineering. Yeah.
We're going to run out of time, but I want to talk about, just real quick, about this whole thing about religion and government and how that's clearly changed since Bush took power. Like Jimmy Carter was on The Daily Show, and he was talking about how there used to be a brick wall that was built between church and state.
Right.
You know, and it was built by religious men who wanted to make sure that religion stayed religion, state stayed the government.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Bush has been taking this wall apart brick by brick.
Yeah.
What the hell is going on here? Can this be stopped, or are we sort of circling the drain when it comes to this issue?
It may have to get a lot worse before it can be stopped. Yeah. What's the problem? And nothing wrong with a little spirituality in the government? Come on now. Everybody's going to think, it's harmless. And then it has to just probably go as bad as we know it can go.
But
before,
do you think we have the numbers? I mean, like the population?
Definitely. I think we certainly have the numbers. The problem is that the people who are pushing to merge church and state are very unified and I mean, they're messianic.
They're not a majority?
I don't think so. No, I think the people who are fundamentalists are not a majority. They're just a very vocal minority.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they're very well organized. And they're as driven as a terrorist is, because they're driven by the same kind of fundamentalism.
Fanaticism, yeah.
Fanaticism, exactly. They believe that they're doing God's work on earth, just as a terrorist believes he's doing God's work on earth. And they believe that that the ends justify whatever means. I mean, these are the same people who will kill abortion doctors and call it saving lives. I mean, they're crazy, basically. Yeah. They're fundamentally insane.
Fundamentally.
Yeah, they're delusional. I know they're a minority, but they're very well organized, and they're hugely fired up. So, you got to deal with them somehow. I mean, maybe you just got to deal with them the way Bush deals with terrorists, you know?
That harbors them is just as much an enemy.
I think by inviting them to...
by funding
to
them?
Yeah. Right.
By giving them arms.
Their
oil.
Yeah. Yeah. You just, they're
the same way we deal with terrorists. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, guys, thanks for coming to hang out. I wish we had more time because this is
a
lot of fun.
Thank you for having us on your show.
Thanks a lot.
Come by. I'm going to do Tuesdays from now. So if you guys come in early and you want to help me...
Perfect, though. Really?
Yeah.
Sweet.
And for listeners, when is your show, and what are things to look out for the people that do that?
Well, our next Kill Radio broadcast will be on next week right here at killradio.org from 7 to 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, for those of you listening elsewhere in the universe.
We're very big in Iraq.
Yeah, I know. And I want to give a shout-out to all my Iraqi homies in the Hizyay. And... please tune us in then, 7 to 8 p.m., killradio.org. You can also check us anytime at www.corntato.com. So do it.
And I'm very glad to hear about your Tuesday. You're taking up a Tuesday position.
Yes.
When I came in earlier this week, and I just decided, well, I'm here a little early. I'm going to just read. I read that Pentagon story about spying on American citizens and anti-war protesters.
So I wanted to talk about that tonight. Yeah, damn, that's a
well. Right when you turned it over to me, I let him know that both of you are threats and that you're being monitored by the Pentagon. So I hope you feel better.
I'm well aware of that.
I wear my monitor on my sleeve.
Yeah, I was actually thinking of calling that number 1-800-CALL-SPY and just reading the First Amendment. On the voicemail. I think I'm going to do it. Just like, go ahead, trace my call. I don't care.
Call up and say, well, you know, there's a problem here because the, what do you call it? The Pentagon has been spying on Americans. I wanted to let you know. Call the 800 number. Tell them that.
Well, if you can't spy on your own people, who can you spy on?
I mean, come on.
All right, Mo is here to renew his show. We're going to let him get started.
Right.
You've been listening to the Kill Radio News. Bye-bye.